Welcome to the Fresnolandia podcast. I'm Jordan Maddox.
I'm Donnie Bergstrom.
And we've got a great show for you today. We're going to be covering the winner of our music contest for our theme song. We're very excited to share the winner with you. We're also going to be covering the Paco debacle and some of the ramifications in the media that have come from that. And then we're also going to talk about how we each survive the heat. Let's get started. Here at Fresnolandia, we created a contest to try and find the perfect theme song for our podcast. Put this out in May, hoping to gather as many local musicians to compose a short kind of 20-second jingle for our podcast. The winning submission would receive $250 as well as credit on our sites. We had a lot of great entries, and ultimately we decided on an instrumental track by a local group called Stateless Rat. Donnie, why did you like the song in particular?
I really enjoyed a lot of the entries that were submitted, but this one spoke to me in particular because it had a very grunge, early 2000s, late 1990s feel to it. I'm a big Pavement fan, and it just reminded me of that. And I feel like Fresno and what we're trying to do at Fresnolandia is get into the grittiness of Fresno and, I don't know, grittiness, grunge rock, there's a connection there.
Yeah, it's funny. So she attached to those things. I actually attached to there's a positive, like, upbeat whistle that goes on at some point during the track. And so I connected for me the idea that there is a lot of challenges in Fresno, but there is a muted positivity that runs through the city. And there's a lot of people that are quietly doing good things to improve Fresno.
I love muted positivity. I'm going to describe myself that way.
Fantastic. So every week you will hear this song at the beginning of our podcast. It will be the way we introduce our show. And we appreciate everyone that submitted songs. We wish we could have chosen everyone, but we connected with Stateless Rat's track in particular, and we're excited to have that be part of our podcast going forward. Without further ado, here is our new theme song by the group Stateless Rat.
All right, well, we're going to kick this next segment off with a big story that has been consuming a lot of us in Fresno and certainly in Fresno media for the last 6 weeks or so, and that's the recent resignation of our police chief, Paco Balderrama, and the affair he had with a police officer's wife. And here to talk about this with us is Omar Rashad, our government accountability reporter at Fresnoland, who has been covering this topic for the last 6 weeks and recently broke a big story this week about it. So, Omar, how did we get here? How did the chief end up resigning? And tell us a little bit of the backstory.
Hey, thanks so much. Yeah, honestly, just to break this timeline opens. A lot of this just happened in June. To kick things off, on Thursday, June 6th, the city released a press release that Fresno Police Chief Paco Balderrama was having an inappropriate relationship with quote-unquote a non-city employee. This was the first that the general public even heard about these details, and a core element was an investigation had been ongoing since February investigating the chief over this inappropriate relationship. Fast forward to...
I just want the folks listening to understand, it's not normal, and I know your story commented on this and in the story, for the city to announce an investigation of a city employee in the middle of an investigation. I don't know if you want to expand on that a little bit.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I think, like, when the press release first went out, and when the general public just became aware of these really sparse details early June, there were so many questions. And I think one key question that I had in my mind was, why put out a press release announcing an investigation is ongoing about such a controversial situation? And yeah, I think we just had no answers for a few weeks. Yeah.
Yeah. So then the press release comes out. There's a lot of initial media reports. What happens next?
Yeah. So to continue this Balderrama timeline, on Wednesday, June 12, Balderrama was placed on paid administrative leave. And about 2 weeks later, on Tuesday, June 25, Balderrama voluntarily resigned, and city officials held a press conference announcing that he's no longer with the Fresno Police Department, that an independent investigator hired by the city attorney's office found that Balderrama did have an affair with a police officer's wife. However, since the beginning of June, I think there were lots of questions, lots of rumors. Some of those rumors made it into published stories by local news, and we'll definitely get to talk about one specific example of that. But during this press conference where city officials announced Balderrama was resigning, they went heavy criticizing local media for printing and publishing innuendo, gossip, and specifically putting in the crosshairs the San Joaquin Valley Sun.
And that's where the story kind of switched gears, right? Initially, this was a story about an affair, a fall from grace, a resignation of an important public official. And then it switched gears to a story about journalism. How did that happen?
And I think it just goes back to June 6th. We have a press release with sparse details. And then a few days later, the following Monday, we have a story from what appears to be a local online news site, San Joaquin Valley Sun. For context, the San Joaquin Valley Sun, SJV Sun, is run by Alex Tavlian. He's a well-known political consultant in the San Joaquin Valley, and he's also running this news operation. They're the first to essentially publish an investigative story that was supposed to go deeper than whatever limited details were already out in the public. And the San Joaquin Valley Sun was able to land an interview with the police officer whose wife Balderrama was having an affair with, and they landed an interview with that police officer. They didn't name the police officer, but they included quite a few allegations from the police officer directly, one of which was Balderrama abused his position, abused his power, and essentially thwarted the career of that police officer. One specific allegation was that Balderrama was messing with the police officer's work schedule, was purposely not allowing him to have weekends off. And the story alleged, or at the very least published the allegation, that if Balderrama were to allow the police officer to have weekends off, that could have ended his affair with the police officer's wife.
Has any of this been substantiated? Yeah, that's the word.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really important question. On June 10, the San Joaquin Valley Sun comes out with this story with all these different allegations. Fast forward to June 25, when city officials announced Balderrama's resignation. City officials, and specifically city manager Georgianne White, called out the San Joaquin Valley Sun and talked specifically about unfounded allegations that were in the Sun's report that were not substantiated by the independent investigator that the city attorney's office had hired. And I think that's really interesting. You have a local public official strongly criticizing the San Joaquin Valley Sun and really going after essentially what's gossip and innuendo, in her own words.
One thing I would love to just say, as the editor of Fresno Land, and certainly the reaction after the June 25th press conference from a lot of both members of the media and some members of the public, was, why is the city throwing the media under the bus here? This is the city's problem. This is the city's fault. They're the ones that have handled this investigation very strangely. They're the ones that put out a press release with very little details, leaving a lot of questions unanswered in the middle of an investigation. But Georgianne's comments about the SJV Sun really got us thinking, like, yes, it's very strange for the city to do this and very out of practice. And it's very interesting that when there's really sensitive investigations of someone's misconduct, even though the chief clearly had an affair with an officer's wife, something that no one is defending here, like no one is absolutely defending any of his actions. And investigations need due process. People need a fair hearing. People need to make sure that the things that they are being held accountable to are real and factual and actually happened. And so that's part of, I would say, the broader context here too.
We also have the political dimension, because the officer in question here is Jordan Womhoff, who's a county supervisor in Madera County. How does politics play into this particular story, Omar?
Let's look at $110,000 that Wamhoff paid a political consulting firm called Park West Associates in order to get elected. In 2022, Jordan Wamhoff had a successful bid to get elected to the Madera County Board of Supervisors. His biggest expense by far, making up 82% of all his campaign's expenses in 2022 and 2023, were payments to Park West Associates, which is run by Alex Tavlian, the same reporter slash journalist who published the first story and what appeared to be the first investigative story about the situation about Balderrama having an affair with Wamhoff's wife. And I think at the core of it is, should a political consultant be in journalism, number one? And also, if a political consultant is appearing to do journalism and appearing to be reporting and appearing to publish factual news, should he be disclosing the fact that he has a political, a financial relationship with subjects of his media coverage, with people he's kept anonymous in his stories? And just another detail, the initial June 10 story published in the San Joaquin Valley Sun had no author. And that's something that city manager Georgianne White brought attention to. And what's interesting is that there's no disclosure of who even wrote the story at the San Joaquin Valley Sun. And interestingly enough, just I'd say about two weeks later, there's a clip of Alex Tavlian going on local radio KMJ, going on a talk show, and actually explaining that the story was co-reported by himself and another member of the San Joaquin Valley Sun staff. But that's not even disclosed in the initial story. And at the core of it, I think members of the public should know who's writing journalism. I think members of the public should also know about any potential perceived conflicts of interest between the people writing journalism or reporting on what's going on in their local community and the people that they're reporting on.
When I moved to Fresno, the media landscape was confusing for me. I saw GV Wire. I wondered what that was. And then I remember touring a Granville track home and then connecting the dots.
When we took on this story, we didn't initially think that the main sort of core of the story was going to be a story about journalism ethics. And so Omar's reporting went into the relationship that Alex Tavlian of the SJV Sun had with Jordan Wamhoff, the county supervisor slash Fresno police officer. And a lot of your reporting ended up leading you to talking to journalism ethics professors and experts who were able to explain in what context is it appropriate, if ever, for a political consultant to be running a quote-unquote news website, especially if the sources and the subjects of the reporting are people you have financial transactions with. And so could you just share a little bit of what the experts told you about that?
Yeah. No, absolutely. I think I had, you know, some really informative conversations with ethics experts, and they were on the same page on practically everything they told me, which is, number one, a political consultant should probably not be doing journalism at the core of it. But more specifically is about transparency. And if a journalist or a reporter has a conflict of interest, that must be disclosed to readers. And at the core of it is journalism is supposed to be for public interest. It's not supposed to be done to satisfy the interests of relationships that supposed reporter has. And what's important is for the public to be able to just have all the facts in front of them. What's really interesting is 5 years ago, Alex Tavlian spoke to KVPR about how it's possible for a political consultant to also be a journalist, which he described himself as. And I think what's really interesting is back then he used to disclose conflicts of interest at the bottom of stories he reported for the San Joaquin Valley Sun. It's unclear why it appears he has maybe changed his standard to being transparent about his perceived conflicts of interest. But across the board, media ethics experts have been very clear about how conflicts of interest must be avoided. If unavoidable, they have to be disclosed. There's just no way around that.
And I totally can empathize with a lot of news consumers and readers and residents out here who are like, how do I make sense of this landscape?
When I moved here, I saw a lot of different who I could trust or what motives or what financial backers were behind a lot of these news outlets. GV Wire is one example of that.
Right. Yeah. And the same thing nationally. It's not just the New York Times and the Washington Post. It's the Daily Beast. It's, I can't even think of all of the different online outlets that have proliferated in the last decade or so. And in our world of journalism, there are standards, there are ethical considerations, but we don't have a regulating body that approves you as a website, or we don't have radio as to a certain extent regulated by the FEC.
Mm-hmm. It's been put on consumers of the media to be able to evaluate, which is why a lot of, you know.
But I will say, so Fresno Land is a nonprofit news outlet, and we're part of a newer crop of digital media outlets that have come up in the last decade or so. There's about 450 of us roughly across the U.S. now. And we are, and that belong to this group called the Institute for Nonprofit News. And to even become a member, you have to be vetted by what kinds of transparency practices you have around disclosing your donors. So like on our website, we list all of our donors. Whoever gives to us over $1,000, their name is on our website. You have to have a clear ethics policy listed on your website. You have to show that your coverage is dedicated to the public interest and is really about not salacious things, but is about the bread and butter of public interest journalism, local government. And so we've been through a vetting process, but I can understand that most people have no idea that you need to do that. And so that's why it ultimately comes down to a lot of reporting to just hold each other accountable for when we think there's breaches of ethics.
Has Tavlian commented on the story, or were you able to reach him for some kind of comment?
So I reached out repeatedly, did not hear back from Alex Tavlian.
So where's the story going?
That's the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
There's a lot of... First of all, let me just say this. So the chief has resigned. He's on his way out. We have a new interim chief, Minicasto. There's going to be an entirely new hiring process to find a new police chief. And I think a lot of really valid energy needs to be spent on making sure that process is transparent, that there's a lot of opportunities for the community to weigh in on what our next chief will look like and what standards we hope that chief holds himself to in leading our city's police force. So there's that. And I think that this story has just been another piece of the puzzle in helping the general public understand how the political machine works in Fresno. And I think that is something that we hope to continue to do at Fresno Land, is illuminate power and how power works in Fresno.
Omar, we really appreciate you talking with us and the thought and detail that went into the article. I'd encourage everyone listening to go read the full article at fresnoland.org so you can pore over the details that Omar covered thoroughly through his article. So thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. All right, Fresno, I'm sure you are all sick and tired of talking about how hot it is. It is the only conversation topic we know how to use right now, but we're going to talk about it anyways. We're getting to the end of this insane heat wave. Jordan, what are your heat hacks and how have you been surviving?
I generally run hot, so I constantly think about ways to keep myself cool. Couple strategies I have. Number one, taking a hot shower before bed. It's counterintuitive, but when you actually apply heat to your body, cools itself down naturally as a defense mechanism. So the more heat you can apply to yourself right before you go to bed, the better. Second one, I have a roughly 4 foot tall sauna in my closet in my house. And almost every evening, I'll get in there with my phone, play some chess, listen to some hip hop, and try and get the sauna as hot as I can get it. So right now it caps out at about 140 degrees. And I found that generally by applying that much heat to your body gets used to being hot. And so when I step outside in 115, I don't feel the heat in the same way I used to. And then finally, this is a little embarrassing, but when I lived in Southern California, mostly apartments I lived in did not have air conditioning. I lived at that edge where you live in Los Angeles, but it's actually hot in that part of LA, the Pasadena, Eagle Rock area. And so when you get into the 90s, it would be so hot that we would need some kind of air conditioning. So I'm embarrassed to say that we would drive to our local big box store, buy the most expensive AC, portable AC unit. I'd use it right up to the 3-month window and then return it to whatever big box store I purchased it from. And I'm embarrassed to say that I was too ashamed to go to the customer service area in the big box store. So my wife would typically go by herself to return the AC unit. So
yeah, folks, don't try this at home.
Yeah, but please don't. But it helped me survive. How do you survive, Donnie?
I have kids, since my kids and I are huge fans of Foster's Freeze Dollar Cone Wednesdays to get our soft serve fix. Shout out to the Shields and Cedar location. We love you guys. And we also, this last Saturday, did something we haven't tried before. And my husband had the idea of ranking every single splash pad in Fresno. And I believe there's 9 of them. And we wanted to try as many as possible to see which one was the best one. We only got to 3. So we first started at Todd Beamer in Northeast Fresno. It was fine, but the water was like river cold. Maybe because the water in Northeast Fresno is mostly from the river. That made a lot of sense to me. But anyways, too cold for me. And then we tried Fig Garden Loop Park. That one was fine. The water was more manageable, but there was like limited features. I would say after 30 minutes, it's all right, I'm ready to move on. And then we did Inspiration Park, which I thought was the best one that Fresno has. And I've heard this from other people that Inspiration Park is generally one of Fresno's best parks overall. And the splash pad or the splash park there did not disappoint.
What made it so good?
More features. The water temperature was pleasant. It was cold but not freezing. They have this like giant feature where you stand under it and at any time a giant bucket of water could dump over you. And all the kids there thought that was the most amazing thing ever because you don't know it's going to happen. And then you have these water guns you can squirt at people. It was fun. We liked it.
And I know you have a small sample size, but are they crowded? Are the splash pads crowded?
No, they weren't. There were a lot of people there and it was about 112 that day, but it was still pleasant.
Okay. We want to hear your ideas, strategies, and tips for surviving heat.
Send in your heat strategy, heat survival tips in Fresno to a couple of things. You can email us at tips@fresnoland.org, or you can leave us a voicemail or a text at 559-202-3656.
Each week on this podcast, we're going to close by sharing one thing that each of us is loving this week. And I'm going to kick it off to Omar. Omar, what are you loving this week?
I am loving playing the Final Fantasy VII Remake. I can't remember the last time I've seen a soundtrack to a video game be longer than an hour. And the soundtrack to Final Fantasy VII Remake is 6 hours, more than 6 hours. And it is beautiful, instrumental, that can power my day, that can be a little ambiance to my work day, and gosh, I love the video game and I'm loving listening to the soundtrack.
What about you, Donnie? What are you loving this week?
I am loving power walks in the early morning in my neighborhood. I've started a little kick where I go on a walk before I start my day, and I go on a walk for 45 minutes. And I have built like a little community of power walkers in my neighborhood, and sometimes we join each other and we're going to call ourselves the Fresno High Power Walking Club, or Fresno High Rocks as a shorthand for it.
Do you do the arm motion? I'm thinking of it's like a sport, right? Like speed walking?
I personally don't do the arm motions, but there is a older gentleman in my neighborhood who does. And every time I walk by him, I'm just like so in awe and I'm like, hi, good morning. But when I was in college, my roommate and I used to ironically power walk, and we would do like the arm motions that you would see in like 80s workout videos. And so I've always thought I should do that, but I should not actually.
Or get like those little like 2-pound weights and you just hold them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
One of my neighbors does do that and it's wonderful.
I just finished season 3 of The Bear and I loved it. There was a lot of mixed reviews in the media, in part because this season of The Bear doesn't have there's a lot of like flashbacks and a lot of thematic episodes where you're learning some of the backstories of the characters. But I thought this was the most beautiful one so far. There's one particular episode that I loved, and it shows you part of Tina's backstory, one of the characters in the show, and how she originally started working at the original Beef. And I was just mesmerized. I think it's the best show on television. I think there's not really anything that's come close. I hope we haven't peaked in terms of prestige television. I'm worried that we maybe have, and that's probably a good thing for my reading life. But The Bear has given me hope. So
I still need to watch season 3.
Same here.
It's fantastic. Yeah. Thank you for listening to the Fresnolandia podcast. We want to thank Omar Rashad for coming on to talk to us about the Paco debacle. We'll see you next Monday, and make sure you stay cool this week.